is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA. Let's
rewind it. Good afternoon. I'm Dahlia. And still ahead on this sunny as the sun sets, I guess, -5 late afternoon, early evening in Ottawa. We are going to get to our long-term care homes. And, well, apparently we'll get to them before Doug Ford does because he still abandoned them. We're going to hear what somebody who's been advocating for help, begging for help to our premier, has to say. But right now, I was really surprised the other day when I saw this because people were calling for Conservative leader Erin O'Toole's resignation because he denied the cultural genocide of Indigenous peoples taken by the government and put in residential schools. I wasn't surprised that people were asking him to resign for that because that is disgusting. But at the same time, something else was happening that should demand a resignation and outrage. But I didn't see anyone except my next guest talking about it. My next guest says, wiping the history books clean is what Canada's Attorney General David Lametti is proposing, because it looks as though residential school abuse documents are in line to be destroyed. History will be destroyed that we need to learn from. Liberals won't comment, and the Liberals are the only ones who could stop this. So who's calling on Justin Trudeau to resign? Because duplicity is more dangerous than a conservative leader right now who's denying the cultural genocide of Indigenous peoples. So what should we do? What do you need to know? Joining me right now, we have the new Democrat MP for Timmins, James Bay, Charlie Angus. Hello, sir.
Hello. How are you doing?
Well, I'm about to get you worked up. So before
I
feel as though you have a lot to say here. So right now, you need to stop Attorney General David Lametti from destroying the evidence of crimes at St. Anne's Residential School, because this could eliminate evidence that not only we need to understand and make a better future, but this could eliminate evidence survivors need for ongoing legal battles.
Yes, I think what people really need to know about St. Anne's, number one, it was one of the sickest, most depraved institutions ever constructed for destroying the lives and hopes of children. The residential schools are notorious. St. Anne's was uber notorious. It was so bad, they actually used to torture with electric shocks the children for the kicks of the staff. We're not talking about the deep, dark past. We're talking about records that relate to hearings for compensation for these survivors that the federal government was obligated to bring. All these were all police records, tens of thousands of pages of incredible work by the OPP that identified all these crimes. And yet the Justice Department went into these hearings and they lied. They lied. They said there was no documents, no evidence. And so survivors came in, told their stories of horrific, rapes and abuse and torture, and were not believed. That caused so much trauma for the survivors. And then we found out the government had been sitting on the documents all along. And rather than do the right thing, the government has fought tooth and nail. They spent millions of dollars. Carolyn Bennett is the lead on this file. Trying to deny justice. And we're finally, I think, at the point where we can win this thing in court and force the government to do the right thing. And now they're set to destroy all the documents so we would never be able to prove the evidence of what was done to these people. And I think this crime ranks up there with what was done to the survivors, the children. And we cannot let David Lametti turn those shredders on January 1st. We just can't let that happen.
The government of Canada has really shown no interest in negotiation here. The Canadian government has spent, as far as I see, maybe it's more, you'll probably know better than I, $3.2 million fighting St. Anne residential school survivors in court over the last decade. These are figures that were released by Justice Canada. Meanwhile, we have everybody talking about, and you know, rightly so, Erin O'Toole, who denies cultural genocide of Indigenous people. But how come people are avoiding and ignoring what not only what Justin Trudeau has said, but the duplicity of it and how he's This money that has gone into fighting these survivors could have been paid to them already and helped them.
Well, I think it's a really important point. First of all, Aaron O'Toole was being an idiot. He's a smart guy. He knows what happened. He was just doing this to crank up students, and I think it's really disgraceful that he would try and rewrite such a terrible history. But I was equally shocked to see on Twitter Carolyn Bennett lecturing him, Minister Mark Miller lecturing Aaron O'Toole, and it's like, whoa, let's just back up a minute. Let's talk about respect for survivors. The survivors of St. Anne's are one of the most incredible groups of resilient people, but they have, you know, they couldn't even pay their own bus money to come to hearings. The federal government has used every tactic. They've kicked this over to BC Superior Court. They fought them at every step of the way. Even when they were forced to turn over some of the documents, they said, well, you can't use it unless you find a witness who could verify what happened. So the survivors went and found witnesses. And then they said, oh, you can't use the witness because she's under some kind of confidentiality agreement with the Catholic Church, of all things. So we've fought this time after time after time. But on January 1st, the federal government, because of one of the court rulings that said that, you know, when all this is said and done, documents have to be destroyed on January 1st. Well, this isn't all said and done. This is happening now. We have outstanding hearings. And Carolyn Bennett and David Lametti are showing absolute bad faith. And Justin Trudeau, Mr. Reconciliation, he needs to look to St. Anne's survivors in the face. And he doesn't have the guts to do that. So I'm calling on him, just stop. Stop the games. Stop this toxic legal war. Sit down and do what Canadians want, which is let's find a solution. We can negotiate this and we can find a solution to put this really ugly chapter of our history into history. Right now, it's in the present.
Can Canadians do anything to help you, Charlie Angus?
Well, people have been amazing. There's a change.org petition that's got tens of thousands of signatures. It was started by one of the children of one of the St. Anne survivors. We're asking people to contact David Lametti's office or Carolyn Bennett's office and say, you have a moral obligation to do the right thing. We will not stop. The St. Anne survivors will not stop. This is one of the darkest stories. You know, one of the survivors said to me, if you made a horror movie and you put children in it and you thought of the worst thing you could ever do, you still wouldn't have made something as bad as St. Anne's. That's our history. And our present is the fact that the government has the documents. They've got the names of all the perpetrators. They've got the witness lists of all the crimes. And they blacked it out. And now they're gonna burn it. And we can't let them do that. Those records have to be kept.
You know, as much as you keep calling upon David Lametti here and Carolyn Bennett, their mouthpieces for Canada's grandest mouthpiece of them all, our Prime Minister. So Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who, as you just said, Mr. Reconciliation, he really needs to be included in every mention you make of how this history is going to be burned.
Absolutely. I was with the Prime Minister when he spoke to the survivors, and he said to them, you will never have to go through this again. Your story will be believed. And he cried. Well, he had tears in his eyes. And I was like, wow, that's really impressive. I bet he's finally going to do the right thing for St. Anne's. Nah, not a chance. He wiped his tears and he sent his lawyers back into court like the next week. So Justin Trudeau, you know, he will be remembered in history for this. We all will be remembered for what we did to advance reconciliation. This is the fundamental relationship between the settlers' people and the people who were here. And we got to do the right thing, and we cannot let them get away with burning the evidence and hiding the crimes. We need to get justice for St. Anne's.
Charlie Angus, thank you so much for taking your time to talk about things and address things that other people typically don't. Or maybe they do it duplicitously, but you do it with the passion and with the action behind it.
Well, thank you. I've spent over 7 years on this file, but then I look at the survivors and they've spent a lifetime. So we will stay on this until we get justice, and we ain't going away.
Charlie Angus, he is the NDP MP for Timmins James Bay, and he is calling on Justin Trudeau and the Liberals to do the right thing and not erase history.
You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not mouth. I'm telling you why. Cause Santa Claus is coming to town. Yeah.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Thankfully, Santa is an essential worker. So even if there's a lockdown throughout Southern Ontario, whether or not Ottawa is included, Santa will still come to town. Just not for the people experiencing food insecurity and all of those issues, and they can barely pay their rent. Where's Santa going to be for them? I'm Dahlia, this is Ottawa Now, and still ahead, long-term care. This has been a fight for months and months, if not decades. So where are we now? What's happening? Is it actually good that some money has gone to long-term care, or is it too little too late? We're going to get to that coming up after the news at 4:30. But I wanted to get to this story because it made nice headlines, and it's not just for this company that we're going to focus on. It's many companies are included in things like this, but we're going to focus on this company right now because it got some fantastic headlines. I even saw headlines right across CTV and 580 CFRA. Walmart has received headlines for giving employees up to $250 in bonuses, $150 to part-time workers, $250 to full-time workers. This bonus cost equals 2.5% of Walmart's pandemic profit, 0.9% of the Walton family's pandemic wealth gains. And it's interesting because we're conditioned to expect so little that many people actually see this as progress. So let's break it down a bit. After Walmart made billions while shutting out small business, Walmart gives pennies back to minimum wage workers. An appreciation bonus, because nothing says appreciation like pennies from people who made billions off the backs of the appreciated, right? And it's likely that most of this money is going to go back to Walmart anyway, because where else can its employees shop? We're talking about the same company that has food donation boxes for their own employees so their own employees can eat. For people working for a company that makes billions in profits and they aren't paid enough to feed their families, that doesn't raise any questions. Oh, but yes, true. The Walton family has a lot of money and they're philanthropic with it because they even have a charitable foundation. The Walton Family Foundation. They give away about $2 billion as of 2018. That's the latest stat I could find, which is incredible, $2 billion. But how much of that came directly from the billionaires? $58 million. What does $58 million amount to? Well, less than the value of their collection of cars. And then let's look at that $58 million that went towards their foundation. How about a tax break on that? How much of a tax refund credit did they get on that? The rule of thumb at not just Walmart, but many big business, is you give something, then you take something away. And remember what Chapman said today. You should never take anything away from an employee. Once you give it to them, it's theirs. That's why when they gave the pandemic pay at Chapman's, they kept it with their employees, unlike Loblaws, for instance, who gave their employees a pandemic pay increase, take it away, and then give their stockholders greater dividends, but nothing goes to their employees. So why, oh why, did something like this happen? Before we even get, by the way, to the story of Walmart making the rounds and making big headlines on really a nothing topic, some common tactics that places like Walmart or Loblaws or places like that can often come into play after a bonus would be a cut in hours and overtime and layoffs. And it's weird that paying workers a sufficient wage to live seems to be a big problem for employers. And the more especially low-end wage earners make, the more they spend, and the more this drives demand. So it doesn't make sense to say that billionaires are the ones who drive the demand in the economy and treat them that way, when really it's these minimum wage earners who do. So why does this story from Walmart make rounds? What's the big deal about it? Because I didn't see the initial press release from Walmart, but what I can say is that companies such as Walmart or Amazon, they often send out these press releases pretty much written as news stories. So the journalist at whatever media establishment need only copy and paste the story, and it's done. Complete, done. A story that could take 30 minutes or even hours when it comes to research that has to be done can be copied and pasted within seconds. There was a commercial from Amazon, which you may have seen as a news story, which it was said word for word by many news outlets, word for word. These are not news stories. These are commercials. Also, these bonuses, they don't say we value you as an employee or we value our employees. They just say, we bought a really cheap commercial to be played by every media outlet to make us look good. Support local business. 4:29, your news is coming up. It's -5. I'm Dahlia. This is Ottawa Now. Long-term care. The next guest we have on has been begging Premier Ford for help. So where is it? Well, let's find out next.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
You be of good cheer. It's the most.
I'm Dahlia. It's 4:37. It's -5. And still ahead, Dr. Ray Dionandan. He is going to share his thoughts. Is Ottawa going to have to join Toronto, Peel, when it comes to lockdown come Monday? We're all trying to read Doug Ford's mind, but we won't know until 1 p.m. Monday. Maybe an epidemiologist can give us some insight on this. But right now, somebody who's been trying to get insight and help from Doug Ford, and I don't know if it's, no, I'll just say it's proven futile. There's a staffing plan now for long-term care in Ontario, or is it better to call it a lack of a plan as we are heading into what should be the most wonderful time of year? I'm thinking of all of those people who are in long-term care who have lived maybe the hardest year of their life when they're at a point in their lives when they should just be living it to the best of their abilities. And we're stopping them from doing just that. So joining us right now, a person who has been advocating for those who don't have the voices to do so, who has been talking directly to the Premier of Ontario, begging him for help. From the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario, its CEO, Doris Greenspoon. Doris, I just want one time to get good news from you when it comes to long-term care. Where are we at right now?
Thank you, Dahlia, for having me to report back. So a report was issued yesterday, and we were all waiting so much for it, Dahlia. The report is good. The timelines are terrible. Basically, what we are going to get before elections is 15 minutes more per resident per home. 15 minutes more. Of course, that's not what we need. As you know, we were asking for quite a bit more than that. It will bring us to 3 hours of care per resident per day. What we are asking is 4. So it's now an election platform, because the rest, it was committed. They did commit $1.9 billion for 4 hours of care, but the timeline is 2024-25. And the problem, Dahlia, is that there is no commitment to legislate this. So you know, whether it's the same government or a different government, enough that it's a different minister and may say, well, you know, now the priorities are different. There is no COVID. This is not legislated, so no, we cannot spend the money on that. So the next step for groups like RNAO that are not going to give up ever on this, Dahlia, is that now we are going to ask every single political party that they commit to legislated 4 working worked hours for every resident in every nursing home every day, composed of a certain percentage of RNs, a certain percentage of RPNs, and a certain percentage of PSWs, because they will continue to suffer until we see that happening.
I see continuously Doug Ford get up and say, hey, but we pledged to commit up to $1.9 billion. We're giving to long-term care. How can you watch anybody suffer? It seems as though he's saying one thing, but something else is happening. So break it down for us, Doris. Break it down. Looking back over the past few months.
The report, which is in our website, commits to 4 hours for residents, but it says by 2024, 2025, and it's unclear what, when. But the problem is all is after the elections, except of the 15 minutes that will happen, not this year, but next year, meaning still before elections.
So it will be put on the next party who takes power to deal with it, or it will be put on the conservatives to continue to stall to deal with something like that?
Well, the issue is this. You know, people that are listening to this have the power to push. You have been absolutely amazing in allowing us to share what's going on. Other reporters, you know, the same. So the public and the media is on site on what residents in nursing homes need. Now we need either this government to deliver faster or whoever that comes next to them to commit and deliver in writing, and that's why it needs to be legislated. It must be legislated. If not, Dahlia, it will never happen.
So, Doris, as we're waiting and as you constantly and consistently fight and ask our premier, who says that this is keeping him up at night, to do better and not much really happens, tell us the realities of what we can expect in long-term care if we continue to go without your advice being heeded by Premier Doug Ford and our government.
So number one, Dahlia, already residents are suffering in the second wave of COVID, even more than in the first wave already. You know, yes, they will announce on Monday, most likely they will announce not only more lockdowns, but very serious one because the pandemic is out of control, which means, Dahlia, that many of the nursing homes will need to have more residents in their homes, therefore more of them crowded in rooms and die, and they don't have the staffing. Right now, they don't have the staffing to serve them. They're getting right now 2.6 or 2.7 or less hours of care per day. That's nothing for people that are in their conditions, including people that are that have COVID. Can you imagine that? They have right now 18 minutes of an RN per day. In the best case scenario, usually they have 10 minutes a day because they don't have the people there. We are asking 48 minutes of an RN. They now have about 25 minutes, if at all, of an RPN. We are asking for 60 minutes of an RPN. They now have about 1 hour and a touch of a PSW per day. We are asking for 1.32. So I want people that are listening, you are families of people, you are friends of people, you have your community. Just picture a resident in a nursing home that has wounds, that has potential to fall, that has some, many of them COVID positive and cannot by themselves even eat alone. They need help, that they need additional compassion also and warmth. Just picture them with about 2 hours or 2.4 hours of care as we speak today, because we haven't put now the money that is needed to serve these residents. It is outrageous for a country as rich as Canada that we cannot serve better our seniors in nursing homes. And we all share in that culpability.
What's even worse, Doris Greenspoon is with us right now. She's the CEO of the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario. We've been talking for months about this, about our long-term care and how Doug Ford, despite him saying he can't sleep at night, this keeps him up at night, he's not doing anything really substantial to help them in any way. And Doris, you know, when I read stories or I hear from people who say in long-term care that if they were cared for, life would be okay, but instead right now there are people in long-term care who are choosing, they're asking their doctors for medically assisted death because they're more likely to get assistance in dying than they are in living. This is a terrible state for our country, a country as rich as Canada, to be in.
It's devastating, Dahlia. It's devastating. I myself don't have a family member or friend in a nursing home. If I had, I tell you, I will be pounding on the tables because I am doing it without even someone that I know. But I just picture and I hear from my colleagues. You can read in my blog, please, Doris COVID-19 blog. You can Google Doris COVID-19 blog and you will see 2 weeks ago a nurse that wrote anonymously because she was afraid of being fired of what she found in that nursing home when she went there.
Doris.
It is outrageous, Dahlia, and people should be up in arms demanding from the government and also from the provincial and federal government to put an end to this suffering.
If people want to help you, help the people in long-term care, what do they need to do?
Feel free, absolutely, to send us a message. My email is dgreenspoon, dgrinspoon@rno.ca, or go to the website rnao.ca, and there is a petition there. There is an action alert. We need to put stop to this suffering because we are not a country that doesn't have the means to do that. Instead of giving to people to put money in their pockets, because this last year, 1.5 million went to the three largest chains for the shareholders. Instead of that, we need to put money back where it belongs, which is in the care of people.
Doris, you are tireless, and I thank you for all of your efforts. It's not just your job. It's something that you really care about, and I wish that more people cared about people the way you do. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so very much, Dahlia. Take care.
The CEO of the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario, Doris Greenspoon. I'm Dahlia. This is Ottawa Now, and still ahead, an epidemiologist weighs in on what we might be able to expect come next week here in Ottawa. Lockdown? No lockdown? What do you think? Also, a good long-term care story. I just wish it would have happened here.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Hi, happy Friday to you. I'm Dahlia. It is 4:54. It is -5. And still ahead, we're going to be joined by Dr. Dhiyanandan. And he is an epidemiologist who just says it like it is. We don't know what Ford has to say yet. We're waiting until 1 p.m. on Monday to find out if we're going to go into lockdown here in Ottawa. Many people say, no, we're doing well. We're doing okay. But when we hear talk of Southern Ontario being put into a lockdown, much like Toronto and the Peel region, we wonder, can this happen to us too? So we're going to find out from Dr. Dhiyanandan coming up what he thinks we can expect. We were just speaking with Doris, and Doris has been fighting for people in long-term care to get the help that they need, that our premier has promised them. And I've got a good news story about long-term care, but it's not a story that took place here in Ottawa, but it's a story that will make you smile right here in Ottawa. So let's give this one to you. Because I'm sure you've realized that when you're rushing and when you have something super important to do, you can easily make a mistake, like heading in the wrong direction, getting on the wrong bus. And this scenario is actually one that happened to a woman in Belfast last week. She was on her way to see her 79-year-old mom, Eileen. Jacqueline Mason wanted to see her mother, so she had to make an appointment because with COVID protocols, visits are limited to these pre-scheduled half-hour time slots at this long-term care home, but they're very hard to come by. So she's on the bus and this wave of panic, you know, when your face gets hot and flushed and red and you feel as though fire is suddenly on your face, even if it's -5 outside like it is right now. She's on the bus and this wave of panic hits her as she realizes, I just got on the wrong bus. And my 30-minute window to see my mom is closing fast. And I don't know when I'm going to get to see her again. So what does Jacqueline do? She runs to the bus driver and she tearfully explains her situation. So rather than just say, well, you know, take this bus or try that bus or get off here, I'll let you off here. Bus driver Alec Bailey, he wanted to take action. So he gets up, stops the bus first, then he gets up, and he says to his passengers, look, this is the situation. What do you think? Can I turn this bus around? And everybody was all for it. So he turned that bus around. He drove her to that long-term care home, which was off of his route, drops her off. He calmly goes back to his regular route as if nothing out of the ordinary had happened. But by pure coincidence, when Jacqueline arrives at that long-term care home, there was a news crew there from a big Ireland news station because they were covering vaccinations that were just starting to roll out. So even though she didn't know the bus driver's last name, his first name, she relayed her tale of the compassionate Route 11B Metro driver who made it his mission to ensure she'd see her mom. So by the time he gets home that night, his story, without his name, had made the news. And as soon as Alec, the bus driver's daughter, saw the story, she said, that's my dad. So he walks in and his daughter confronts him and says, Dad, you did this, didn't he? And he says, what? How do you know? How does anybody know? And she says, Dad, you are internet famous. And I absolutely love her father. And the fact that that bus driver's daughter knew that it was him without ever hearing his name who did that must mean he's a much, much nicer man than just what comes across in the story. And I love how he asks the passengers too, are you guys in? And everybody was in. And that is the true spirit of helping people around you. No matter what position you hold in life, there's always something that you can do as long as you do things meaningfully with care and with purpose. That bus driver proved it. Alec Bailey, what an awesome, awesome, awesome human being. I'm Dahlia. I'm happy. I'm revved up. If the news has anything sad in it, just remember this story because the news is coming up. And then, should we be looking at a lockdown next week? I'd like to think not. Let's ask the epidemiologist after the news. I'm Dahlia. This is Ottawa Now on 580 CFRA.